With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Jack Campbell thought he had everything.
Merry Christmas.
I'm giving everything I've got to this deal.
You're a credit to capitalism, Jack.
Then one day, his past caught up to him.
Kate Reynolds. She was my girlfriend in college. I almost married her.
But instead, you left her.
I took the road less traveled.
And fate.
What? Him?
Me.
Gave him a glimpse.
What do you need, Jack?
I got everything I need.
Yeah? You just remember that. You brought this on yourself.
At what his life could have been.
Kate?
Come on, Dad, get up! It's Christmas, it's Christmas!
Jack!
Strong coffee.
Where's my Ferrari?
You got a Ferrari?
Just tell me what's happening to me!
This is a glimpse.
A glimpse of what?
This is not my beautiful house.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and look at them through a modern eye. I'm Robert Larone. With me, as always, is
Lane Waters
and
J.M. McNabb.
And it's December.
Woo!
It's the holidays.
I wish we had like jingle bells right now. We'd like put that over.
Blaine,
what?
Listen.
Is that the sound effects library I hear?
That's right.
That's amazing.
It's December, and as is tradition on Rewatchability, we have a lineup of holiday favorites to talk about all month.
<Favorites? All right.
laughs> They're favorites. They're favorites to somebody. It's Christmas for somebody everywhere. That's not a thing.
What?
No.
Keep Christmas in your heart, JM.
Okay, sorry.
No, I mean, it's actually still the tail end of November for this.
Yeah, we're recording early.
A few days early. So we do have to kickstart ourselves, I think, into the holiday spirit. And I think this is a good one to do it. Mm-hmm. But before we talk about that, first we want to thank our Patreons. And those are the people who keep the spirit of Christmas alive for us.
All year round.
All year round.
Aww.
By giving a little bit of money each month, and that helps us keep the podcast going. And in return, you get the podcast early as well as ad-free, because ads are not in the spirit of Christmas.
Pretty sure Santa Claus was invented to sell brown sugar water, but okay.
Oh, shit. So today, our first entry on the holiday rewatchability advent calendar is The Family Man. Mm. Blaine, you admitted last week that you had never seen this movie.
It was a great shame of mine, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd never seen this movie with Nick Cage. No, I mean, I think I kind of confused it with The Weatherman
right.
in my mind.
Family, weather, what's right. more important?
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought that I had seen this. I was like, yeah, he carries around a bow and arrow. He's trying to hunt down families or something. I don't know. But it wasn't that movie. So I had never seen this. I had seen like kind of maybe bits and pieces of this on like TBS or something. But
right.
I had never seen the whole movie. But JM, I remember you talking about this movie and saying that like this is kind of like a big movie for you or like a movie that you liked.
It wasn't, no.
Okay.
But I probably did mention it. No, because I did see it and it – I don't even think I saw all the way through because I didn't remember how it ended. But – I do think this movie is significant because it's in that era when no one knew what to do with Nick Cage.
Right. Because okay. They were trying to put him forward as a leading man
yeah.
in an unironical fashion.
Yeah, because he was in big movies. He was in like Gone in 60 Seconds and he
right.
was in all those action movies. And then in the early 2000s, they were like, hey, maybe he's a romantic Christmas comedy guy. No.
No, he's not.
So I've always been...
I tried.
I've always had a... I think I watched it on video or on TV in the early 2000s. And I will watch any bad Christmas movie as long as it was released theatrically. That's my cutoff. Wow. I won't watch all the, like, Hallmark
the
crap.
Netflix stuff that's coming out.
Yeah, and if it came out in the theaters, you know, Deck the Halls with Danny DeVito, fine.
You're there.
I'll watch it on TBS or something, like you said. But yeah, I always just remembered how crazy this movie is because it's Nick Cage being Nick Cage.
Yeah.
It's basically It's a Wonderful Life remade with Nick Cage, directed by an alleged rapist.
Oh, my God.
What this movie
and
is.
And Taylor Leone in the middle of it all being like, what the fuck is happening?
And she's also nuts in this movie. She's...
Yeah.
She's the Nick Cage of, I don't know, what was that sitcom she was on?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
She's the Nick Cage of whatever network that TV show is on. But no, everyone's doing crazy work in this. Jeremy Piven's back as Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, like the best friend to the main character in every 90s movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you went to Jerry Piven, he'd just be like, you're living your life, man. You got to go for it. He'd be like, what? Come on, Piven.
Another guy who's been accused of some stuff.
Yeah. Most of the people who worked on this movie are shitty.
Yeah. Jesus. They're in the bad reality.
That's right.
Yeah, but I remember liking parts of it, but partly because it's so crazy. And because it's so many contradictions rolled into a Christmas movie. So I kind of have a soft spot for it. And like I've mentioned before, I like alternate reality things, like Mr. Destiny, of which is the same movie but reversed.
Yeah.
What about you, Rob?
I saw this in the mid-2000s, I think. And, you know, I remember it being sort of notable for, like, just being a little bit off.
Right.
Like, it's a little bit weird. The Nicolas Cage factor is strange. And also the ending, which we'll get to, has, like, one sort of mind-boggling element, which I really can't get past. So I always thought it was such a strange Christmas movie.
I can't wait to talk about the ending of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, a couple years ago, I was dating somebody who, like, loved this movie.
What?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She listened to the podcast as well, and so she wanted us to talk about it on the podcast. And there was just so many Christmas movies, we never got a chance to do it.
Wait, we're doing this movie because your ex-girlfriend told you to?
Oh, my God. Well, no, did she call you up this season? And you're like, maybe I should do something nice.
Did you get on a plane instead of...
We're definitely not doing it for that reason.
Oh, okay.
But she did want us to talk about this movie on the podcast. Right. And then after I went home from Christmas, I came back and she broke up with me.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
So I do have like a little bit of like... Is this like a glimpse into my own alternate reality? Yeah.
If you hadn't been chasing all of that lucrative podcast money.
Damn it. I just had HelloFresh dollars in my eyes.
It's working around the clock.
But so I did want to come back to this movie and give it another look to see, you know, just just what was going on with this movie.
Did you watch it with her when you were dating?
No, we didn't.
Oh, okay.
No.
You refused to watch it. I think that might be why you broke up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said she broke up with me because I didn't want to see The Family Man. And now we're going to see if she regrets it. I assume she's still listening.
That is a mighty big assumption.
But The Family Man, it begins on... Does it begin on Christmas Eve?
Yes.
Yes. Back.
Oh, well, there's a flashback. The flashback's not at Christmas, is it?
This is what I couldn't remember. Oh, okay. I couldn't remember if it started, if the flashback was at Christmas. But it starts.
Like in the airport.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a time when people are at airports at Christmas. It's one of the busiest days for air travel. Mm-hmm. But Nick Cage is there with his girlfriend, played by Taya Leone.
Yeah, and Nick Cage, they didn't have the technology to de-age him, but he looks like a 50-year-old man.
Well, he was our age when he shot this. He was 36.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Lord. Just a moment of silence for that.
Wow.
Poor Nick Cage.
But also I'm
had
feeling,
a rough life.
Feeling pretty good about my hairline.
Right? Yeah.
It's a tearful goodbye because he is getting ready to fly off to London for a year-long internship, and she has to stay in America because she is in law school. Mm. And, you know, it's a hard moment because they're going to be apart from each other even though they really still care for each other. And just as Nick Cage is about to get on the plane, Taya Leone says, wait, don't do it. I have a bad feeling about it. Like, I have a feeling like if you leave, then we're going to end up breaking up and we'll always regret it. And so, you know, what's a guy to do in this situation? I don't know if you guys have ever been in like a similar situation when you're at the airport. Nick Cage, he hugs her. He says he loves her so much. And then he gets on the plane. Bye.
Bye. Just runs off. Oh, man. Yeah. I've been in a similar situation, and yeah, you just end it. I don't know.
Someone should do a fan edit where that just blends into the beginning of Con Air. So he gets on the plane, and then all of a sudden he's got long hair and undershirt.
You just CGI a bunny into his hand in that scene. That'd be great.
That's a real alternate timeline. But fast forward to the future, the early 2000s, the very early 2000s. Nicolas Cage is now a high-powered stockbroker president. I don't know how the stockbroking industry actually works because I'm super poor.
I don't think that's what it's called either.
But he's the boss of all these other stockbrokers.
Yeah.
And he's like called them all in on Christmas Eve. They're all there. Saul Rubinek is there. Mm. And he's like, you can't go home on Christmas Eve. Pretty sure Saul Rubinek is Jewish.
I know. Why do they need one character who's like, I need to get home to my kids. It's Christmas. And they cast Saul Rubinek?
Yeah.
Well, then I think also we should say this movie is super racist. Right. But I think they cast him so that later when Nicolas Cage's job is essentially usurped, it's usurped by like his Jewish friend.
Yeah. Well,
so many problems.
There's so many racist characters in this movie.
I see what you're saying, but Brett Ratner is also Jewish, so I'm sure he wouldn't...
He didn't write it.
No, that's true. That's true.
They probably put in the script a Saul Rubinek type.
He gets the script, he's like, I think I got this. This is great.
Yeah. But his life is by all measures very successful. Yeah. You know, he wakes up and...
he has casual sex.
Yeah, that's with great. Somebody he doesn't seem to know very well. Mm-hmm. And
he says, you're a wonderful lover, the way people always say.
It's like he's never been with anyone before in his life.
Right.
Everything he talks about during the sexy moments, I'm like, that's so not sexy in any way.
This movie was written by a 15-year-old boy.
Oh, my God.
And he drives a Ferrari.
Right.
I mean, it's the whole life. But, you know, he doesn't have anything in his life that is meaningful. He doesn't have anywhere to go home on Christmas. In fact, he's willing to fly to Europe so that he can help shepherd through this big business deal.
Well, shepherd, that sounds kind of Christmassy.
Oh. I also totally forgot to mention the whole, like, that Taya Leone had contacted him in the right timeline for some mysterious reason. So he decides it's Christmas. You know, he decides he's going to go for a little walk in the city streets.
Yeah.
It's snowing. He feels the snow on his face.
Oh, God. I hate every, like, weird tactile moment he has in this movie.
Yeah.
This movie was written by a 15-year-old on ecstasy.
Let's do a massage train. What? It's also weird because he doesn't seem to be that empty. He's really nice to everyone that he comes in contact with. He's not, like, an asshole.
No.
Like, at the beginning of... what's the one?
Mr. Destiny?
Or like any movie like this, it's like they're an asshole. They're not good people. And then
he seems super happy. He loves his job.
He's singing all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's super happy, though. I mean, only a real Scrooge would make his employees work on Christmas Eve. That's what we're supposed to understand. There's no love in his heart.
Sure. I mean, I guess.
Though you're right. He does have like a very humane side because he happens to be in this convenience store. Mm-hmm. He's buying some eggnog, presumably to pour it all over some woman that he barely knows.
That was another sexually awkward comment he makes. When the woman says, it's Christmas tomorrow, we can't hook up. And he says, oh, so I'll pour eggnog over you. That is gross.
And then eggnog becomes like a recurring motif through the film.
Yeah.
It's like always there.
And he definitely has a food fetish. Like this is a thing that happens because on the stairs later, he's like eating cake and making out with his wife.
Cake
in their mouths. Yeah. We'll talk about that scene. But he loves food and sex together.
Yeah.
It's a thing for him. Yeah.
This was a year after American Pie. What was going on in the culture where people just wanted to have sex with food?
I don't know. It's so weird.
With desserts, specifically.
Yeah. But while he is at the convenience store, a guy comes in. He's played by Don Cheadle. And he tries to scam the store owners with this, like, lottery ticket.
Played by the guy from Lost.
The guy from Lost. Yeah. So he's used to alternative timelines as well.
It's a Faraday thing.
Yeah, he's great.
Also, he looks, like, so un-fucking pressed to be playing, like, another, like, Korean convenience store employee.
Yeah, doing, like, a thick accent that we know is not his accent.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt bad for him. But Don Cheadle gets...
Well, I feel bad for Don Cheadle, too.
He's War Machine. Come on. When they give that guy a superhero.
Yeah.
But he gets aggravated and pulls out a gun and threatens to shoot somebody. And Nicolas Cage, this is where his humanity comes in, because everything that we have come to know about this person, we should believe that he is a cold-hearted capitalist guy who doesn't care about anything. But he decides to intervene in this situation, weigh in, and he offers to sort of buy the lottery ticket from Don Cheadle so that he'll have the money and he'll go away and nobody will get hurt.
Yeah, you can put the gun away kind of thing.
Yeah.
Stupid-ass white boy in $2,000 suit gets capped trying to be a hero. News at 11. That's what you want to see? You want to see cash up in here? You want me to set it, son? Do you want to die? Do you want to die?
No. Look, I'm talking about a business deal. Okay, I buy the ticket from you for $200. I take it to a store where the guy behind the counter doesn't have a death wish. I just made myself a quick $38. Like I said, it's just a business deal.
So he does that, and...
And that's the first racist stereotype that Don Cheadle plays. It's awful.
Yeah.
But I was even kind of confused, because Don Cheadle's like this supernatural being. We can kind of theorize what he is later.
And that's the second.
Well, that's a big one, yeah. But he's ostensibly testing the guy from Lost, because he's going around, he keeps going around like testing people's morals. And the way he tests the store owners is like he aggressively asks them to cash a lottery ticket and they won't, I guess, because he's black.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out a gun. What's the gun accomplishing?
It's also always at store counters, because later there's that young woman and he's like, oh, she took like more change than she was due. No character.
He pulls out a gun. He's purely in the convenience store branch of like the universe.
I know. It's so weird. Yeah.
Does that mean that girl's going to have an alternate reality, or does the alternate reality only happen to people who are good?
Character, yeah. He's always searching for character. And boy, is Nick Cage a character.
Well, but Nick Cage, he says, hey, like, there are ways to get your life turned around. You don't have to have regrets. Mm-hmm. And then Don Cheadle's like, you're talking to me about regrets? I'll show you regrets. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to do something bad to you.
Yeah. But also, he said, first he's like, we can, like, get you back on the right track, maybe chemically. It's like, what, because he yelled at a convenience store?
Yeah.
Like, what is he talking
about?
You
must need medication.
So you must be a heroin addict because you're black and you yelled at a convenience store.
If you experienced racism and reacted badly to that, then you need chemical help.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And also he's acting like he's homeless or something. I was watching it with my wife. She pointed out like everything Don Cheadle's wearing was like designer clothes. Like he's dressed in super expensive stuff. Like there's reason why anyone would think he was homeless.
Yeah, it's strange. Yeah. But, yeah, he says that he's going to do something, and then he goes away. Next morning, Nicolas Cage wakes up, and where is the woman that he doesn't know her name?
Drowning in eggnog.
He wakes up with Taya Leone lying on top of him, kids jumping in the bed. It's Christmas morning, and he freaks the fuck out.
He's in a real Duchovny.
Well, not anymore.
No, not anymore. Yeah.
I bet this would be one Christmas movie that the Duchovny household skips.
Probably.
Wouldn't that be weird to just watch a movie starring your ex-wife that's all about like how you shouldn't have let them become your ex?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, so much of this movie did seem to play like metafictionally for me, because I guess I mostly only know Taya Leone as the like Yoko Ono of the X-Files.
Oh, because they relocated to L.A.?
Yeah, and then David Duchovny quit the show. And it always seemed to be like, oh, because he – maybe that was like the sexist press in right. the – whenever that show was on.
Well, I think it was even sexist to say it about Yoko.
Well, obviously it was. And yeah, I mean, obviously Yoko has had a career –
Are you trying to say that Taya Leone is a brilliant artist?
I am. You should check out her book about plums or whatever it is.
That was The Simpsons.
No, but doesn't Yoko Ono really have like a book about plum? Like it's some sort of plum book and then you open it and it has like little like, you know,
Maybe.
Absurd things that
right,
you do?
Right,
I know art.
Right.
But yeah, I didn't have the best impression of Taya Leone going into this film.
Oh,
well, I felt like – because like David Duchovny, he suffered from an addiction, right? Like sexual addiction, and that was like the hard thing of their marriage.
He suffered from a bullshit addiction.
Come on, man.
And then the other thing
I'm
is –
I'm sure it's a real addiction.
Well, it is weird because he starred in that show.
California.
That. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Californication. Yeah.
Which was – I feel like Californication was like an excuse for my bad behavior by David Duchovny.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It is a little like if like – in the 90s, Courtney Love starred in a show called, like, Heroin-O-Rama or something.
Yeah.
Have you tried to watch that show recently, Californication? It does not hold up.
No.
It is not.
Like
it was horrifying.
It was on the bubble of sexism.
it was not horrible. Just on the bubble.
Oh, Jesus.
It was banging that bubble.
Let's not talk about David Duchovny. We're here to talk about Taya Leone, who is also crazy in this movie. This movie is full of lunatics.
Yes. But, yeah, Nicolas Cage, he wakes up at this family home on Christmas morning, and he does what any man would do if he woke up in a strange family house. He freaked out, got dressed, and left. Just like my dad did.
Did your dad go to the city and try to get his job in the stock market back?
Yeah, it didn't work as well for him.
Okay, sweet.
But yeah, Nick Cage does go to the city. Mm-hmm. He, you know, naturally, he goes to his apartment. The doorman won't let him in, doesn't seem to know who he is. The old woman that he flirts with in the elevator is also...
slash sexually harassed. Like, it's a little much. I don't know about flirting. Yeah. But yeah, no one knows who he is, and they're like, you know, get the fuck out of here. And he even goes to the building that he works at to see the only other black character in this movie.
Right. No.
Doorman, was he magic?
I presume so. He made his car disappear.
That's true.
Yeah, but then he eventually does get back home.
Well, yeah, Don Cheadle picks him up in his Ferrari and sort of explains vaguely what's going on. Like, you have to fix something. I'm not going to tell you anything about it. What get out of my car.
Every movie is like that. Like, just tell them before they get into the situation and they won't mess everything up and have, like, an uphill battle to go. Their new family. You know?
I feel like at least Clarence gave a little more than that, you know?
Nothing about this movie makes sense. He's not that bad a guy. He accidentally runs into some kind of magical entity who punishes him for doing something nice.
Yeah.
Nothing about the morality of the story makes any sense.
No. But he tells him, yeah, you're basically going to have to figure it out all for yourself, and then kicks him out of the car. And then
he's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not helpful. But he sort of winds up running into Jeremy Piven, who he is horrified to discover is his best friend.
He's like, I'm trapped in a 90s movie. No. Is this serendipity?
No. No.
He looks in the mirror. It's like Quantum Leap, and he's John Cusack.
He's like, I leveled up. All right. Yeah. This is good.
But he sort of fills him in on, like, the sort of the rest of his life. Like, he's like, you know, he's just a schlubby dude.
How many people in this movie are going to go, oh, you're so crazy for saying you're a different person.
Yeah.
And then tell him everything about his life. They're thinking that he's having a psychotic break at all.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody's ever concerned for anybody's mental health in these movies.
No.
Yeah, like at one point, like when he goes home and he's talking to Taya Leone, he's like, this isn't my life. Like, I'm a different person. I work here and I have to. She's like, not this again. Like, he said this before. It seems very specific.
I know.
That old routine.
God, yeah.
And then also to justify his daughter kind of like helping him navigate the alternate reality, they write in a thing where the daughter thinks he's an alien?
They did a pretty good job.
Who did?
The aliens in the mothership. He looks just like him.
Thanks. Slightly better looking though, right? Oh no, you're not going to start crying, are you? I don't think I could really deal with that right now.
Do you like kids?
On a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, that's fucked up. It's so weird.
Again, David Duchovny.
Because the daughter's like, you're not you. Like, what happened to my daddy? Which is great. I think that's like a beautiful little
thing. Yeah, I thought
that
was neat.
Where like the daughter can recognize beyond all these other people that are busy with their own lives, like who her true dad is. Great. But then he just goes along with this alien conspiracy thing, which is so weird. If she was just like, when is my daddy coming back? And he's like, soon, I hope, you know? And then yeah.
Your daddy was dead. He was killed by what I guess is a demon? I don't know.
He was probably shot in that convenience store. I don't know. Did he go to the city last night? What's happening to your dad? Am I a twin that I didn't know?
But also, Taya Leone's mad, but she's really not mad. And like, if you, when you were a kid and you had a family member abruptly leave on Christmas morning with no explanation for 6 hours. Mm. Like, I would have, you know, like, if he wasn't murdered, you would throw him out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes back. Not this again.
Yeah.
It's like, it's my time. On Christmas, it's my time. I don't know. I don't know why everyone's just reacting to him like he's the the level of psychosis he's experiencing is completely normal to his character.
Yeah. He has a psychotic episode from their perspective. They talk about it for 3.5 minutes, and then she's like, okay, get dressed. We're going to a party.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, where's like the – you don't seem to know any of her inside jokes. You don't seem to know when to pick the kids up from school. Like, that's why I kind of liked that little girl being like, you pick us up here. Like, you drop us off there and doing that sort of thing. Like, having that little helper I thought was a real interesting and cool way into this – well-worn trope of a movie.
Yeah, that was pretty heartwarming. Though I do feel bad for that little girl since she's been traumatized. She's probably like drawing pictures of aliens taking her daddy away.
Don't feel bad about her because she was traumatized. Feel bad about her because she doesn't exist at the end of this
nope,
movie.
That's what I wanted to talk about. I can't wait to get there. All
well,
right,
now I feel better about it because she's going to be so fucked up. It's like, just wipe that one clean.
God.
But yeah, he does not know how to navigate any of the family situations. Presumably, like any male person who has a family, he doesn't know how to like change a diaper. He doesn't know how to do any of this stuff. We get lots of the Nicolas Cage being a man trying to do basic things that women can do very easily.
Yeah. No, the sexism is strong in this movie.
Yeah.
Against both sexes. It's just awful all around.
And his relationship with Taya Leone is also back and forth.
I mean, I think the kind of the I don't know if it's weird. It's just odd in a movie where it's about what he didn't have and what he has is like no matter what life he's living, he has a really, really healthy sex life, like no matter where he is. And I mean, I'm not a family man yet, but I you know, I might not have as much sex when I have kids. But like they're, you know, she's into it all the time. And
right.
He's like, oh, this life sucks.
Well, there is a sense that it's, you know, that it's like it's precious. It's a precious commodity. Like, you know, right. You got to get both the kids to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the way that, you know, she's tearing off her clothes
right.
in the bedroom. It's not like the sexy sex. It's like the like we have 2 minutes of peace. So right. Let's do this now because this is all we get.
Right.
And the first time that it happens, Nicolas Cage pretends that he's asleep. He doesn't even want to have sex with this person that his brain has desired for 30 years, unlike in Mr. Destiny, where Jim Belushi's like, hey, work it out for me.
Yeah, he is a bit of a good guy in this movie, a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it was a pleasant surprise because I didn't think this movie would do that. I was like, oh, this is nice. Good guy.
But then he's going to have an affair. Like he doesn't – the same rules don't apply to like his neighbor or whatever.
Yeah. That's why it's so uneven. It's like it's showing you that he's a good guy because he like I guess respects his wife and also is just stunned that his wife is beautiful. Like, he's never saying like, oh, you're such a good mother to our kids or you're such like a nice person or you've grown to this amazing good person. He's
you're
like,
still hot, Taya Leone.
That's exactly what he says.
He's, no, like, he's disgusted by her life. She's like a pro bono lawyer, and he's horrified by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so stupid. I hate that. Like, it kind of works with his character, but also it doesn't work with his character, because if he's a jerk, then why is he so nice to everyone? Like, it's just so back and forth.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not, like, a good person. He was dropped into a situation where there's a vacuum of a good person.
Right.
And he's sort of trying to fit into the role in many ways, because he doesn't really have any choice. He can't get his job back. He can't be the other person. So he's, like, stuck with this family. And so, yeah, he does try to take advantage of it, because he doesn't really seem to care at that point when, the neighbor who has been hitting on him, he actually has to ask her, is there something going on between us?
Right.
Because he wonders if his alter ego has been, you know, having an affair, whether he's not the nice guy that he supposedly was. But they haven't been yet. However, he is willing to do it. So he asks Jeremy Piven to write down her exact address. And Jeremy Piven, in some very this is truly an alternate reality, Jeremy Piven tells him to do the right thing and not have an affair.
Everyone's moral compass, Jeremy Piven.
Ooh. Watch out, world.
Yeah, because Nick Cage in this reality has been such a good guy to Jeremy Piven, stopped Jeremy Piven from having an affair, and now he's still happily married.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, returning the favor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like they do add the detail where, because Nick Cage, we haven't really talked about how he's a tire salesman in this reality, which is, upsetting for him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because, like, his father-in-law had a heart attack and he had to kind of take over the business while he was getting better. It wasn't just that, like, you know, he's automatically has a worse job because
because
he's married. There's a chain of events. But, I mean, his father-in-law seems okay. Like,
Like,
why doesn't he just get someone else to do it or something? And then there's a part where he kind of convinces his old boss to hire him at his firm.
I know.
And his wife basically doesn't let him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's like, we're poor in Jersey, and that's where we're going to stay. It's just a weird thing, because I think their life also isn't that hard.
Like, right.
But, it's a good job, and maybe he should take it.
And
it seems reasonable.
She's like, we're not, relocating to New York, but they just keep popping back and forth between that office and the house. Like, it's no big deal. And it's like, why can't he just commute?
I know. Well, and also the whole thing was she was like, yeah, we had to move out of the city because we didn't have enough money to raise kids in the city.
Right.
I would have stayed there. And then, like, later on we hear, like, she's like, we can't raise kids in the city. He's like, you were gonna. You just didn't have the money. And now you do. So why don't you move to New York?
Yeah.
And, yeah. It was very weird.
Yeah.
This movie tries to, like, set up that idea that you can't be successful. You can't be ultra successful and have, like, a family.
But the sort of, like, other side of that is shown with the Saul Rubinek character in the alternate reality, where he has Nicolas Cage's position, but he does have his family.
I guess so, but they don't go into too many details about it.
And the Cribs, he hates his family.
Yeah.
The Cribs in the office, like, he's putting a kid down in the office.
Like, oh, did he? I missed that.
Yeah, they had all those, like, toys, and then there was a crib in the background.
But then they,
like,
also implied that he didn't get the full deal that he could have.
He didn't. Yeah, it was only $121 billion instead of $130
right.
billion.
Well, he obviously can't be happy.
Well, and the Nick Cage character in Jersey has a $1.7 million business. So he's making some money. He only has, like, four employees. Like,
yeah, that's true.
It's a good job. Like, there's no tired. Anyway, it's just crazy.
Grass is always greener.
I guess. He has a good enough job. They're, like, middle class. They're not poor. Like, it would be different if this was actually, like, you know, Brewster's building.
He's stepping down, like,
trading
in
places.
Such a big way. And this is a guy who's lived his life to be, like, this sort of person, to become this sort of person. Like, he's singing opera in his underwear. Like, that is, you know, that's a very specific thing.
Well, you know, the other weird
Nick
thing.
Cage.
The other weird thing about this is, like, just because, like, you don't have the same income, you're not ultra rich, doesn't mean, like, all of your tastes automatically changes. Like, he could still like opera and have opera on CD or something.
Nope.
You know, like, he could still.
It's not worth it if you can't get to the Met.
Like, he's, you know, he looks in his closet and is horrified by all the, like, schlubby tire manager clothes yet. But like, I just don't understand why would his taste in like music and art and literature all change just because he – that's what I find is like fundamentally upsetting about these movies, to try to make it seem as though like if you get married, if you have a relationship with a woman, she will
– you have something loving and true.
She will upend like the core facets of your personality to make them more like domestic and lame. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. He can make the life that he had in the city in Jersey as well. Like it's so close. Like I'm sure Tia Leone would let him pour eggnog on him or something.
He needs a couple of opera CDs and like one suit and some rubber sheets for the eggnog.
Yeah.
And he wants that suit. That scene in the store where he's like, I think I'm going to buy the suit. And she's like, no, it's like a $2,400 suit. And that's, I don't know, $1 million in 2000 when it was just made. And he's like, I love that scene because he goes, no, I want it. I'm buying it.
Come on, take it off. All right. We'll go to the food court and get one of those funnel cakes you like. Your dad is a crazy guy.
No. Do you have any idea what my life is like?
Excuse me?
I wake up in the morning covered in dog saliva. I drop the kids off, spend 8 hours selling tires retail. Retail, Kate.
And then the sweet thing is that for the anniversary gift, she buys him a suit by the same brand that she got at like a Winners or a discount sort of place. And it's not anywhere near as good as the suit that we saw him wearing. Mm-hmm. But he wears it. He wears it to his job interview. He wears it to the city when he takes her on the big date to make up for not buying her an anniversary present because he didn't know it was their anniversary. Fucking daughter dropped the ball on that one.
She's like four.
Yeah. And he's like, if you drop the ball again, you're going up to the mothership. You're getting taken away.
But like that, symbolically, the suit that Tia Leone buys her becomes like, you know, like the nice thing. Like, you know, it sort of makes him into the man that he wants to become a little bit again, which I thought was really beautiful. However... just as things are sort of starting to go his way, he has an option to get the job back, and he's really started to love his family, and he likes the life that he lived. He runs into Don Cheadle at the convenience store again, and Don Cheadle tells him it's just a glimpse. It's all going to end.
Wait, hold on. Back to Don Cheadle for a second. When we meet him again, he's like testing someone, and it's like he gives her the wrong change for like a 10. He gives her change for a 20 or something.
Right. And she doesn't fess up.
Doesn't confess. So he makes it. Is she going to hell now? What? Like, what is happening?
Yeah. If you've ever done that, you're going to hell.
Oh, no.
If you've done such small, petty things, you're going to hell. It's like there's
that is how Christianity works.
There is no morality in this movie. Merry Christmas.
If only somebody was born to die for our sins.
Yeah.
Under that religion.
Just confess on your deathbed. You'll be fine.
He could be a Hanukkah demon. We don't know exactly what holiday he's representing on Earth.
Well, why is he – I mean, Nicolas Cage is celebrating Christmas. I think if he's a demon, he should be, you know,
but he runs into
that
him.
Denomination.
It's accidental.
Okay. Or is it all part of God's plan?
I don't know.
Probably not. I don't know what kind of God is sending Don Cheadle to do lottery scams and pulling guns at people.
A racist God. It's a racist God right there.
But
this movie confirms that A, there is a God, and B, he has a racist convenience store division of... angels? I don't even...
I'm not really too sure. But he is sad that his life is going to go away. Mm-hmm. He even tries to stay up all night watching Tia Leone sleep so that he doesn't wake up in his original timeline. But he does. And it's supposedly what he wanted, right? Because he wanted to have his life back, and he goes into the office. It's Christmas Day, and he's going to go do the thing where he goes to Europe so he can shepherd this deal.
Yeah, that woman comes back because she bought some eggnog. She's there in the morning, like stripping off her kimono in the hall.
I just felt so bad for her.
Yeah.
What woman doesn't want to be waterboarded with eggnog? on Jesus' birthday.
Oh, God. But he's not feeling it. He decides not to go to the airport, and instead he goes home with his... Oh, he goes to visit Taya Leone to see what it was that she was calling him about in the original timeline.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I have this box of old
stuff.
Hey, Jack,
good to see you. Just eggnog right down her throat.
What does he say? And on the stairs, he like says something. He's like, "You make me so hot."
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that scene.
The horrible sex scene where they're eating cake, and then he starts making out with her with cake.
That was like, so fucking gross.
It's my fucking new nightmare because he stares into the camera at one point, like we're Taya Leone, and he's like, "You make me so fucking hot," with like all this cake coming out.
It's just like wet cake crumbs all over both of their faces,
and he's just like making out with her. And then she's like, say that thing you always say. And he's like, well, let's have a shower first. Like, what do you say? And then he's like, you know, let's – he starts talking sexy.
You're so hot, baby, you get my motor running. Or
yeah.
Something like that.
Just filthy. Unbelievable.
Ugh. You're a pretty person and I want to love you forever. But it's actually
– Billy, time to come to dinner. Okay, I'm going to have to pause writing The Family Man and go have dinner with my parents. Come back to this cake scene later.
Yeah.
But he references,
after I play some video games, Jesus Christ.
He references the cake scene later when he's like complaining about his life or whatever, and he's like, she won't even touch me unless I tell her how much I've always loved her or how much I love her. Yeah. As much as I always did.
Right.
Which is still a weird thing to say when you're fucking on the stairs with cake all over your face. Yeah, baby, I love you with cake on your face.
There's no right thing to say in that moment.
Well, that's kind of the problem with this movie is like Nicolas Cage is great as like the cold, detached business guy at the beginning of the movie. But then as, you know, being like It's a Wonderful Life or Scrooge, like he has to make that transformation to like the happy, soulful version of that character. And it is horrifying. Mm-hmm. Like there are so many scenes like that where he has to kind of laugh or act human. And it does not work.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I like Nicolas Cage. I don't mean to, you know, rag on Nicolas Cage. He's not.
It's just the wrong part.
It's the wrong part. He's not served by the material, but there are scenes where he's like supposed to be laughing with his children and he looks like a maniac.
Yeah. He's like, this is normal Nicolas Cage. Like, by that I mean, it's crazy Nicolas Cage.
Are we sure that he's not actually John Travolta wearing Nicolas Cage's face?
Like, he says things, you know, he'll be like, Merry Christmas! You know, like he like yell it at the kids. Like, he's like, he has two guns shooting them at the same time and he has to yell over them.
This was originally the Family Man port of Call New Orleans.
A, B, C, D, like goes the whole alphabet. Yeah, it's just he's just so miscast in this entire movie. I mean, not the beginning, but like as the Family Man, which is the title of the movie.
So the final beat of the movie, of the story, is that he decides that, you know, he can't live without Taya Leone. And so he rushes to the airport where she's leaving to take her plane to Paris.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
With the McAllisters.
Home Alone 3, Lost in Paris. But he's like, hey, you can't leave. We have so much to talk about. I can't live without you. Let's have a cup of coffee. And she's like, ah, bye.
Coming on a bit strong.
And then he's like, we have a house in New Jersey. We have two kids. They're beautiful. One plays the violin not very good.
Yeah. They don't have those kids. Those kids were like timeline murdered because they don't exist anymore and they never will.
No.
Because, she eventually agrees, okay, we'll go for coffee. And then the last shot of the movie is them having coffee at the airport cafe with the credits rolling
she's
over.
She's taking a later flight.
She's taking a later.
After that coffee, she's like, you're crazy.
Yeah. It's like, well, security's that was fun, Jack. I'm glad we got to catch up. And all the best, really, you know? I think this worked out best for the both of us.
There might be some chemicals that can help you with what you're experiencing right now.
Yeah, right. Has anyone ever been, like, convinced that quickly? Or not that she needs convincing because maybe you just made it up, but would that be charming?
I mean, yeah. It's never worked for me.
Can you imagine if you were a woman and this guy that you dated in college ran up to you at the airport and was like, we have two kids. Let's go for coffee.
Add in the cage factor.
Yeah.
Well, we should test this out. Rob, you know, you mentioned an ex-girlfriend.
All right.
I'm sure your current girlfriend would not mind.
Nice Christmas. It's Christmas anyway. It's a good Christmas present.
And that is The Family Man. It's fucking crazy.
Another crazy thing about, or, you know, sort of problematic part of that ending is it's a direct reflection of the opening scene where she wants Nicolas Cage to stay and now he's asking her to stay and kind of sacrifice her career.
Right.
And he got to not do that. He went and was like, no, I'm going to prioritize my career. And then without any shred of, like, self-awareness, he asked her to do the exact same thing. And she's like, all right.
Just like a man.
Well, yeah. She does that to begin with in New York when he's like, I want to move to this apartment. She's like, yeah, I wanted to die in that house, like, next week because I'm married to you. But, like, she's like, I don't want to move here, but I will for you if you want that. So, like, he could have had it all. Even in his other, she's just willing to sacrifice everything for him all the time.
I thought, again, I don't think I ever saw the ending of this. I thought he was going to say, I'll come to Paris with you. And then I was like, no, that's too creepy. And then he started talking about the alternate life they had together. And I was like, whoa, that's way creepier.
Well, wasn't he supposed to go to Europe to do this deal?
Well, It was London.
Which, I don't know if there's a tunnel between those two places. But,
oh, not for the deal, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, but like, yeah, he could go do the deal, spend time with her. They could have it all. There's just communicate. Just use your words, guys.
I just don't see why Taya Leone would want anything to do with him.
Yeah, not after that speech at the airport.
She's had a whole life. Like, yeah. You know, I'm sure that she's had, like, plenty of boyfriends and, you know, people who have had real meaningful connections. I'm sure she's had a great life.
Yeah, maybe Don Cheadle's going around to all her ex-boyfriends showing the visions of what it would be like if they were married.
Don Cheadle's her current boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah. He gets to the door, Don Cheadle answers, and it's her husband.
That would have been great.
That would have been a good ending.
She's like, yeah. Hey, fuck you. She closes the door.
Damn, oh, it. Man. That would have been great.
So that's The Family Man. We're going to be back after this break with the trivia and the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a miracle!
What, Rob, what?
It's a miracle!
What, Rob, what?
It's a miracle on 34th Street.
Oh, you were talking about the fucking movie.
Yeah, no, there is no actual miracle. We're just going to be talking about a Christmas movie next week. No big deal. We're back. It's Rewatchability. We are talking about The Family Man in this timeline. In another timeline, we're all stinking rich and alone. But I have some trivia questions for the both of you, and I hope that they're not too difficult because I want them to be a Christmas gift from me to you.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's nice.
Okay. So question the first. This is a big one. It's in terms of – it's epic. It goes all through the universe. Which star of Family Man has an asteroid named after them?
Whoa.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, didn't Taya Leone's character have a star named after her?
In the movie?
In the movie, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Nicolas Cage bought a star for her in the film. Is that your answer?
What about, I'm going to say Don Cheadle.
I'm going Piven.
Asteroid Piven is going to strike the Earth.
It's the asteroid with hair plugs.
Oh, no, it is in fact Taya Leone. She has an asteroid named after her.
Oh, that's nice.
It's really interesting. Yeah. I found that out. And, yeah.
Cool.
I don't know why.
Oh.
I don't know.
Was
she in Deep Impact or something?
Oh, that would be a good reason.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or David Duchovny just bought it for her after cheating on her with someone.
He's like, sorry, babe.
I got you an asteroid, though.
Okay, so this is a question I think you might be able to get.
Okay, sweet.
Okay, so
let the record state that Rob pointed at JM and then rolled his eyes at Blaine.
And now I'm giving you the finger. So Nicolas Cage hasn't done a lot of Christmas movies, but he has done one other Christmas movie.
Oh, I do know this.
Which also starred Dana Carvey and John Lovitz.
What?
You know who else is in that movie?
Who?
My dad.
What?
Why are we talking about that Christmas movie?
What?
Yeah, my dad was an extra in that movie.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I saw that movie twice in the theater. So I went to go see it with my friends.
We should name the movie. I know it as well as you guys do, but our audience probably doesn't.
Okay.
So.
Well, why don't you say it then?
No, I have a thing. God, so maybe you should.
Do you not know? It's Trapped in Paradise.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's not a great movie.
Oh.
It's okay. My dad was in it. I think like a friend of his produced it or something. So him and some friends went, and they're in the scene where Nick Cage and John Lovitz rob a bank.
Whoa.
That's the thing. It's actually not a terrible movie. It's kind of a fun movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a better Christmas movie than this one.
That's neat.
So watch and the I think, dad in that movie.
Yeah, you can see him. And I think Madchen Amick from Twin Peaks is like the love interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad...
That's awesome.
It's not a bad movie. And Dana Carvey. Because I remember when my dad went to film it, we were all excited because me and my friends loved Wayne's World. And we're like, what if he gets to meet Dana Carvey? He did not get to meet Dana Carvey.
John Lovitz he got to meet.
He did meet John Lovitz in
the
cage.
That's the ticket.
But they said when they were filming, not to bother them. And stuff, not to bother Lovitz and Nick
Cage.
Don't
look Lovitz in the eyes.
But my dad said one woman did go up to Nicolas Cage and say, could I get a picture? And he was like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, he was super nice. And then John Lovitz went, and I'll take it. And so he took the picture for them, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They're just like us. That woman was taken out back and roughed up a bit, though.
Dark.
Well, she never did it again. She was dead.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my final trivia question. What? Nope, that's not it. Oh, shit.
Those are just questions to yourself.
Oh, no.
Why am I still doing this? Why
Couldn't
did I watch
I be
this
a stockbroker? Anyway, I'm going to go talk to an old dude. What other Nicolas Cage movie released the previous year also features Mary Beth Hurt, who played his assistant in this movie? And she is married to the screenwriter of that film. So this was released in 2000. It's a 1999 Nicolas Cage film that also features Mary Beth Hurt.
It was released in 2000?
1999, I think.
Okay.
Maybe 1998.
Fuck. I know one 99 movie he's in.
Yeah.
I know he's in Bringing Out the Dead, but wasn't that written by Paul Schrader or someone?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Bringing Out the Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Paul Schrader is Mary Beth Hurt's husband.
Oh, okay. Oh, great.
Nice. Yeah.
Cool.
That made me feel kind of good because Paul Schrader just seems so grumpy. He needs somebody to cheer him up, you know?
Maybe Don Cheadle should show him a reality where he's single.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's the thing. Mr. Destiny is literally just the opposite of this movie.
Yeah.
Or rather, this movie is that movie's opposite because it's the exact same thing, just showing them married when they're successful businessmen instead of showing them what they'd be like as a successful businessman instead of being married.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was the
Am
pitch,
I wrong?
Jam. You just did the pitch that they did to the
studio. And that movie that was made like 11 years before is less racist.
Yeah.
Even though it has no people of color in it, it didn't have – I mean, we've been dancing around. No one's used the magical Negro term yet.
Well, that was this the second racist stereotype that Don Cheadle played.
Well, it's like – and this movie, I think, was one of the big contributing factors to it.
Yeah. Because
that was right around
was
the
like
time.
This Legend of Bagger Vance.
Right. Green Mile. This was – I mean, obviously, it's a lot of movies before that. But that run
Bruce
of films.
Almighty?
Yeah, I never saw that.
Yeah.
But that run of movies kind of, I think, contributed to the – The
For
term
sure.
Being
yeah.
Entering the lexicon.
Yeah. And it's not comfortable in this movie. Like, it's very blatant that, it's a movie about white people with, like, people of color as, like, background characters.
Yeah.
Or magical people helping them realize their dreams.
Yeah. Or park their car or enter the door. Like, it's not great.
Yeah.
And does Don Cheadle ever, he never comes back at the end or anything?
No.
Does he? Because you expect that kind of like time, like, like Clarence, we have the bell ringing. Or no, George Bailey gets the book from Clarence.
In this movie, it would have been like Don Cheadle serving them something. It would have been awful.
He also works at the airport.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's like, is this lobster dinner for you? Yeah? Okay. I'll just walk away.
I did like the bell. They had that bell in there where Don Cheadle gives him the bell at one point.
And, right. The bicycle bell.
The bicycle bell. He's like, do I ring this if I need you? And Don Cheadle kind of laughs at it. And then later on, De Leone's like, okay, you got to come to this party. And he's like, just rings the bell instead of answering her, which is a great little joke. I actually laughed a lot of that. I liked that a lot.
That was pretty good. Yeah. I couldn't find a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about this movie, probably because it's not well-loved.
I did see one thing about it.
Oh.
It's not much, but I guess someone wrote an article a few years ago because the website that they made for it back in 2000 or 2001, whatever it was, mm-hmm. was still up as of like 2015 or so.
Ooh.
It's not anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
But
I was ready to...
Yeah, I looked. It was I'm pretty sure my computer has viruses now because of the site that it took me to. But I was reading about it and... You know, it had, you know, what you'd expect, like, the trailer, or, you know, the credits, something. And but it also had a forum where you could go and post, like, a thing about your own sort of lost love, like your Taylor Leone
that
you missed out on.
Deep and dark.
Yeah, which is also, like...
Post by D. Duchovny.
But it's also, like, pretty, like, you'd post that and then hope that that person... A, saw the movie The Family Man. B, visited the website. C, went to that forum. So, like, there's a lot of variables.
You got to go to Craigslist. Missed connections for that. Yeah. You can't just go to a forum.
You get the Family Man website.
Can you imagine, though, if, like, a couple was brought back together by the Family Man website? That would be a better movie than The Family Man.
if you are one of those couples that was reunited by The Family Man, email us at rewatchability@gmail.com.
Holy shit.
They were reunited and then they broke up again because it was terrible. It was a bad idea.
Then they saw another Nicolas Cage movie.
That's crazy. I kind of want to go there. I kind of hope that there was like a community on the Family Man boards who, like, you know, became really close. Or started relationships.
It became a neo-Nazi community. So we try not to talk about it.
Well, so with the movie's development, it wasn't originally Brett Ratner who was supposed to direct it. It was developed by
Roman Polanski.
No.
Who did Powder?
No, it was
the worst people in Hollywood writing this movie.
It was supposed to be Curtis Hanson, but Brett Ratner. You know, I can't. Of course, I had to read about him to research this movie, and like I read all these articles, and it was like Brett Ratner loves hanging out with his friends Harvey Weinstein, James Toback, and Roman Polanski. It's like those are literally the four worst guys.
Yeah, it's not only is
Jesus Christ.
Not only is he a garbage person, but all of his movies are like also it's like. X-Men, he took over from Bryan Singer. Rush Hour 3, he cast Roman Polanski. He's just... Yeah. I did not remember anything about this movie. In the first 30 seconds when it says, like, a Brett Ratner film, I think I audibly went, like, ugh!
Yeah.
Searching for the remote?
Yeah.
Like, oh, God, no.
You know what else? I mean, this is an aside as well, but apparently, like, he was supposed to receive some award or something because he executive produced Wonder Woman or something.
What?
And the star of Wonder Woman was supposed to present the award.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't because Brett Ratner.
It was like... A day or two before, like, that big article came out about him.
Yeah.
And clearly someone got to her and was like, no, like, you don't want to be at this event.
But then Patty Jenkins, the director of Wonder Woman, did present it to him and, like, just said a whole bunch of really nice things about him. And I'm like, why?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe she didn't know.
Yeah, but, yeah, it was supposed to be Curtis Hanson, the late Curtis Hanson, who directed L.A. Confidential, of course.
He's involved with two of my favorite Christmas movies.
What's the other one?
L.A. Confidential.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, I think he wrote the movie The Silent Partner with Elliot Gould and Christopher Plummer and a young John Candy.
Ooh.
It was like a late 70s crime thriller set, I think it's set in Toronto.
Nice.
About a bank robber played by Christopher Plummer who dresses as Santa. And it's all set. I mean, this is getting like very local Santa. For us. Yeah, kind of. But it's much more like a noir kind of thing. Yeah. And it's all set in the Eaton Center.
Oh, my God.
Before it was all redone?
Yeah. So it's great for people that grew up in Toronto to look at what the Eaton Center looked like back in the 70s and
you know,
like it stayed cool. till the 80s. Yeah. And
I'm
it's also just
that
a
movie. That
terrific
movie.
Movie.
Awesome.
It's great. It just came out on Blu-ray last year, I think. So awesome.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch that, not this.
Yeah. There were some alternate castings as well for this film, though Nicolas Cage came on board when Curtis Hanson was supposed to direct it. He did lose interest by the time it came back around to him, and so they had talked to John Travolta, and also they wanted to get Tom Cruise.
Oh.
You know, any crazy person that they can find. There's like a list of crazy people. You go first, you go Cage.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You go Travolta. Not anymore, you don't, but you don't go Travolta, then Cruise.
You do. What was that latest movie with the bowl cut that he has?
That was the Fred Durst movie.
Yeah.
What's it called? The Fan?
The Fan.
No, that was just the movie with Wesley Snipes, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he play a fan of Limp Bizkit?
Are there any? Still?
No.
Yeah.
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 All right.
And that's The Family Man.
That's The Family Man. I'm kind of glad that I watched it because it's so crazy. I didn't think that the movie would go in the direction it did. I felt like he would get to go back to his family with his kids.
Yeah, right?
That like he fell in love with.
You think like Don Cheadle has magic.
Yeah.
Why not magic him all the way, not just to like regret? Like he's – once you fall in love with a child – that is your familial relation.
Not making it better.
Yeah. No, that's honestly what makes these movies hard for me to watch, like especially having two kids myself. Like
right. When
same with Mr. Destiny. Like he meets his children and then they just disappear and he's okay with it. And like they could have done a flash forward to like the same kids being there. I mean, I know that's not how sperm works, but you know, Christmas magic. But they don't even do that. And it's very upsetting.
Yeah, it's so upsetting. He had this whole life that he did really embrace and he did change for it. And now he still has the same job that he did in the beginning. He'll have to be that person again at that. It's just like I don't feel like he changed.
Oh, also, guess what probably happened? Jeremy Piven's life probably fell apart.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wasn't there to help him.
Well, also, Tay Leone's dad is dead. Because he didn't save him in the heart attack.
Well, no, he probably lost the business, though. At least.
He probably lost the business?
Yeah, He didn't save his life at the heart attack, did he?
Oh, I thought he did. I thought he was
there.
No,
I think he just took over the business while he was in the hospital.
Yeah. But the other thing that gets me about these movies is that we're shown, like, okay, there's the reality, and then here's, like, what could have happened. But we know from string theory that there are an infinite number of universes, so really an infinite number of possibilities for your life. So your life could be anything. You could be rich and without love. You can be rich with love. You can be a giant walking carrot.
Is that what string theory is?
Yeah, like there's all these different, like, you know, it can be every decision that you make or anybody makes, every possibility creates an entirely different universe. So, like, I don't see how there can be a morality when all universes exist infinitely.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're saying like, yeah, the bubble universe hypothesis was like, because space is infinitely big, then there's infinite amount of universes where everything happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess there might not be any morality. But there's also no free will in this universe if like, you know, it exploded and there's things bouncing around and we come to this. Like, there is no free will because the free will is happening in another universe.
I'm fine with that. There's probably a universe out there where the family man is less racist.
And it would be great to live in that universe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But so, Blaine, you had never seen this movie before.
No. And that's why it was kind of fun to watch, just to see how crazy it is. I'm probably never going to watch it again.
Right.
And I'm sure people that watched it the first time will never watch it again because it wasn't that great a movie. But it was interesting to see them, like, totally rip the carpet out from under themselves every scene that they wrote or directed in this movie, just kind of undoes the scene that came previous to it in terms of Nicolas Cage's character growth and all that stuff. It just keeps on eating itself. And that was interesting to watch. So I think it's interesting. But I don't think it's rewatchable.
Yeah.
What do you think, JM? This was one of your favorite movies, apparently,
it's
in my mind.
It's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
No, I've probably mentioned it before because
I just inflated its importance in your life.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
No, this movie, that's why I got married. I saw this movie and I ran out and No, I did not like this movie. I mean, I didn't think it was good.
Yeah.
And it was still funny for the reasons I thought it would be funny, but it was long. Mm-hmm. I did not expect
it to
be that long.
2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like it was even like worse than I thought. Like I knew there was some problems. Obviously, I knew this was one of the movies that kind of like got that the term magical Negro snowballing.
Right.
But I think that like it was, so I was expecting it. But then like they still had Don Cheadle's character introduced like waving a gun around a convenience store. Like it was like somehow it even like one-upped my expectations of how bad it would be. So in that sense, no, it's not rewatchable at all. It's a crazy, insane, awful movie that no one should ever watch.
It feels like an insult to anyone that would watch it. It feels like trying to slap them in the face for watching it.
Yeah.
What about the Cage factor? Like, is there enough crazy Cage to satisfy the people who want that
maybe
in their life?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, there's some like insane stuff. Him ringing the bell and yelling about Christmas, and you know, a baby pees on him.
But I think he's the most subdued Cage in any of his crazy Cage movies. And so, if you're looking for crazy Cage, this isn't the movie to find.
Well,
it.
You know what? This is before people realized he was crazy, and before he like realized he was crazy and just started rolling with it.
Yeah, it was with the money he made off this movie that he like bought a castle filled with dinosaur bones. But I will say, I think this movie would make a good double feature with Mandy.
Oh.
Because they're both about marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And domestic life. And that being cruelly taken away by possibly supernatural forces.
All right.
Think about it.
Is Mandy a Christmas movie?
Which one should go first?
I think this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you want to see some violence after watching this movie. Like, there should be an uprising. This is a horrible movie.
So, wait a minute. The universe is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I am also in the same place. I don't really think I'll watch this one again. I'm glad that we saw it and all the weird and craziness. But I don't think that it would sustain me for another viewing. There are parts that I like, and some of it is kind of funny, but also, like, yeah, it's not super great, you know. Like, it tries to be very earnest at points and doesn't quite have the ability to do that because of Nicolas Cage. And then it tries to be funny at certain points, but it has like a very sort of – it feels very cynically made. Like, I feel like it's a Christmas movie because Christmas movies are marketable.
Yeah, it also has nothing to do with Christmas, yeah.
No. Yeah. Like, there's no, like, Christmas spirit to it like we expect in these movies. And it has some of the beats of a Christmas movie, but it doesn't really – I don't know. It doesn't satisfy you the same way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give you, like, quite what you want at the end. Like, you want to see the family reunited. You want the family to be together for Christmas because that's what Christmas is hypothetically about.
He's not even a Christmas spirit. Like, the fact that – because we see him doing this throughout the year, Don Cheadle.
Right.
Like, he just – the fact that he runs into him on Christmas Eve is a coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to say not rewatchable for the family man.
Definitely not a family movie.
No, no. And that's rewatchability for this week. Next week we'll have another Christmas favorite coming up. Until then, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. That is where you can subscribe and rate the podcast. And there are other places where you can subscribe, like Stitcher or Spotify or Podbean, and you can do all that there as well. Also, we're on Twitter at Rewatchability. We're at Facebook.com/Rewatchability. And if you'd like to suggest a movie for us to watch, you can go to www.rewatchability.com, do that speak pipe thing that we have.
Yeah, and you can click down on the top of the page.
Yeah.
Yeah, and speak.
Yeah. Do it or you will regret it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.